Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show, where ordinary heroes tell extraordinary stories during unique and never been heard before conversations with your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Hillary's unique listening and way of asking questions results in conversations that aren't usually talked about, so you can create the life that you really want but are afraid you can't really have. We are demonstrating the greatness in the human spirit and creating a world where we all reclaim our birthright of joy, happiness, purpose, and passion. Now, here's your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show. And today we have a very special guest. We have Yogesh Dhruv, who is a businessman, a mindfulness coach, an entrepreneur, a YouTuber, a father, a husband, and the president of an international family business. And boy, does he have some great stuff for you. So I can't wait for our conversation. Welcome to the stage or to the studio, Yogesh Dhruv. Hello.
Hello. Hello, Hillary.
Great to see you.
Great to see you. And, you know, thank you for having me here, you know, on your show. So yes. Thank you very much. I really appreciate this.
Can I say how we met?
Yes.
Okay. So Yogesh is the father of Avji Dhruv, who was my guru. I'll still call her my guru. And she's been a guest on the show twice. And she's one of some of our favorite episodes. So you have high standards to meet, Yogesh. Okay. Your daughter has set the bar very high. So anyway, we're excited to hear your story. We know you've got like a double life, right? He's kind of got a double life here. So anyway, you want to start with... you know, you were telling me where you were born, in a little village.
Yes, yes. So I was born in India with a very small village in western part of the country. So it is called Gujarat. And then I, you know, moved to a big city, which is like a Mumbai or a Bombay in India, which is like a New York in India, you know.
And so how old were you at that time?
Oh, I was like maybe like 5-6 years old. Yeah.
So and, was that a culture shock for you?
Yeah, and in between, you know, I also went to Aden. Aden is in South Yemen. So my father went there for business. So that was, you know, when I was like very, very, you know, probably, yeah, 3-4 years old. And then I stayed there for a couple of years and then came to Mumbai, Bombay in India. So that's, yeah, about 6-7, yeah, probably in the, you know, that age.
And what do you remember? I know you've had some other big shifts in your life. What do you remember from that, that impacted you from going to a little village to a big city?
Yeah, so, you know, going from that small village and then suddenly going into this big city with so much of population and activities and actions around. I mean, of course, you know, I was young and small, so whatever I understand and, you know, whatever I remember, yeah, that was a big shift. So, yeah, that's the how, but then born and I mean I went to schooling, like, you know, elementary, you know, high school, all the schools I've done it in Bombay, and then I went to the college. So I went to the, you know, like a top schools in India and did my engineering there.
Wow. Okay. And was that something you wanted to do? Was that what you were expected to do?
Did you? Yes.
You expected.
So what happens, you know, in India, in our Indian culture, you know, normally the because my father was a businessman,
yeah,
and he was like, you know, he had his father died at early age, so he had to start working. He could not finish his graduation, like, you know, he was just 10th grade, and then he started working, But he had passion for business. So he just said, you know, I'm going to do my business. And that is what he started. And so he had many businesses, you know, he like started, you know, four or five different businesses in life. And, you know, so it is normal practice that, you know, the I am being the oldest, you know, like the son mm-hmm. in the family. So normally the son would join the family business.
Okay.
So, yeah. So when you say expected, yes, it was kind of expected because, you know, he was having a manufacturing plant and that manufacturing plant needs engineers, right? So it happens to be, okay, what do you do? You know, like either become an engineer or you become, so there were three choices. Either you become a doctor mm-hmm. or you become an engineer.
Okay.
Or you become a chartered accountant, like, you know, CPA.
So did you pick engineering or that was just what was needed?
So yeah, I picked engineering because, you know, I didn't like doctor, you know, I didn't want it to be a doctor. And so I said, okay, this will help me is engineering because, you know, I was good at science and, you know, physics and all that. And so I said, okay, that's a good, you know, path. And also it would help, you know, probably to join the family business at a later date. Mm-hmm. So
okay.
That was the reason.
But you didn't go right into the family business, right? You went to a few different companies. Was that on purpose so that you could learn from other businesses?
Yes. Yeah. So after my, like, you know, after my graduation from that mechanical engineering, mm-hmm. you know, I went as a trainee engineer to work for different companies. So just to get some more, you know, exposures and also some training mm-hmm. in a little bit like a big corporate companies, but it was based in Mumbai.
Okay.
So I went there a couple of years, learned, you know, some maintenance, engineering, you know, tooling, tool room and all that. And then my father invited me. Okay, now, would you like to join?
So how old were you by then? In your 20s still?
I was about, I would say 23, about 23 years old. So finished graduation and a couple of years and then, yeah, so joined that family business. The only funny thing happened is that, you know, when my father invited me to join this family business, I said, well, come. And I said, okay, I will come there. But I didn't ask that, is there any exit?
Oh. Yeah.
And later on, after so many years, I found out that there is no exit. You know, once you join the family business, you are in it, right? You can do an exit, you know, but there has to be a succession, right? There has to be a succession plan and successor has to be there. But normally, you know, this is the way the Indian tradition goes.
But he wasn't ready to retire, right? I mean, did you feel like you made a difference for the company? Did you?
Yes.
Yeah. What was the biggest?
I was the first engineer in the whole of our family. So like my father, you know, they had like four brothers and three sisters. They were seven.
Oh.
So out of the seven, all the children, there were none of them were engineers. So there were like, you know, my uncles and aunts and nephews and nieces, everybody, all my, you know, cousins, none of them were engineers. So I was the first child to become an engineer in the company, in the family.
But were they all working in the business too?
Not all of them, some.
So they were your father's brothers and sisters?
Yes.
So was he the oldest? So when his father died, he...
No, he was the second oldest.
But did he... You said his father died, and then did he support the family with his businesses?
Yes, yes.
Wow.
He supported the family, and that's why, you know, he went to this Aden in South Yemen.
Okay.
That time, you know, it was a free port. So it was like a Singapore, you know, it was like a Singapore, a free port, like a, you know, and there So he went at like that early age of like, 10th grade, 11th grade, after that school. And he started, a store, that was the same, like a convenience store, and then he started and slowly built up that whole business. And then he came back to India because that Eden was taken. It was a British colony.
Mm.
But then, this South Yemen took over and they said that, now you have to leave. So all the Indians had to leave that country. So they all came back to India. So my father came back to India. And that time, it was 1964, 65.
Mm-hmm.
That time he came back to India and started the company in India because he said, I'm not going to work for anybody. I will start my own company. And he was passionate about manufacturing. So he said, mm-hmm. Okay, I will start an industry. So he started an industry in Mumbai in 1966. And that company is still existing even today.
And what did he, I talked to Abdi about it, but in your words, what was he actually making? How did he know how to do that? How did he know?
He
just did it.
He had zero knowledge of any manufacturing, but he got a partner. He found a good partner
mm-hmm.
who knew the engineering, and he stayed. Okay, that was the leaf spring. So, the automotive suspension part
mm-hmm.
in a truck where you have all the shock absorber.
Yeah.
So that is the leaf spring. So it absorbs all the shocks.
Oh.
That is the plant he started. And that is the same plant I joined in 1983-84. I graduated from engineering, and after my training, I went there and started in that manufacturing plant. And then he said, okay, you run the production, you run the manufacturing, you run all the shop floor activities. So I started learning and also getting all the manpower, the management, the unions. There were union in our plant, and I had to deal with that. The people are so, it's a very different world. In India, unions are so much, strong. So I had to deal with that too. And so I was like, a lot of stress and pressure from that manufacturing.
So now, okay, so say what that thing was again. It's a leap spring, so it's something with the shocks. So yeah. Why was his, was his better than others, or it was just a need? Was that something that is still, I'm assuming it's still being made today, right?
Yes.
That's still the product. Is it one product, or he has many?
No, one product, but it has got a lot of variety. Every truck, so you see any truck on the road here, they all use the suspension part as a spring. So there are two different kinds. So one is a coil spring.
Okay.
The coil spring is like a round coil.
Yeah.
And another one is called a leaf spring, which is like a laminated, steel. It's a silico-manganese steel, special steel used to absorb the shocks. So any ditch, any kind of irregular surfaces on the road,
mm-hmm.
it will, whatever that shocks are absorbed by the spring.
So do other companies?
It was very, very critical for any automotive, any trailer, trucks, car, every automotive, you name it, it has the leaf springs.
But were there other companies making it?
Yes. Okay. There were other companies making it. So we were not the only person. Yeah, we were not the only company. There were other people manufacturing, but not many. So
okay.
My father just chose because there was a big demand. So
he had an automatic market.
Yes.
Right? So the customer would be the truck or car. Is it just trucks? Manufacturers. They're the ones that needed the part, right?
Yeah, all the OEM companies like, Ford or Chrysler or GM,
wow.
All these big companies, I mean, we were only selling in India that time. But then after, I think after 10, 15 years, he started exporting them. So started exporting from India to other countries. So initially we started in, you know, the like Africa, you know, East Africa and, you know, mm-hmm. South Africa and some of the Middle East countries. So wow. we started with that. And then slowly then he expanded to US. And that was a big market. You know, there was like full container load of springs. We were, you know, exporting from India to US.
How big is a spring? Like how big?
Oh, they, well, it starts like you can say about like, I would say 3 feet is the minimum.
Wow.
And it goes all the way to like 6 feet or 7 feet.
Wow.
So
would they order a certain size and then you would deliver them?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. There is the whole process. The manufacturing process is quite complicated, you know, from you get the raw material, then you cut them, then you bend them, you form fabrication, you know, you heat it up at like 1,100 degrees Celsius, and then you forge them, you bring them, you know, like a forging, so you have to hammer it up, and then, you know, you have to heat them up. There is a heat treatment plant, so heat treatment of the steel, then you bend them into the elliptical shape, then you have to assemble them and then put the bush and bolts and nuts and, you know, U-bolts, everything together as a full assembly. So it's a full assembly.
So do the machines do that? You have machines?
Yeah, there is both. So there is some part is manual, some part machines. So slowly, you know, initially it was more manual. Mm-hmm. Then later on, you know, we introduced more machines and it became more and more automatic.
So did you create the springs themselves or did you buy them and then do what you had to do to them?
No. We, from the raw material to finish, we do everything.
That's amazing, right?
Yeah. Everything complete. Yeah. We had like huge plant, you know, we're working from like start of the operation to end, you know, there was a,
How many people worked there?
That time it was, I don't remember now, I think it was about probably 100 plus employees, but I'm talking about, you know, in 70s or I mean, 80s, sorry, 80s.
Wow. And then who made the first sale to the US?
Oh, my father. Yeah. He found an agent in New York. And he found that person and they got together and he said, oh, man, we have a demand here for all the trailers. If you go to Texas, you know, Texas in Dallas area and Dallas-Fort Worth, all the trailer companies, they use these lip springs so to absorb the shocks. And they use. We started that, like my father started probably like in 80s. And, you know, he came first time and it was interesting story. And then, you know, that became very friend of that customer. They regularly buy in container loads. So for, you know, like 20 feet containers, they come from India all the way to Texas.
Wow.
And they use them.
Wow. Because it must cost a lot to ship them, right?
Yes.
But I guess they absorbed the cost and it's worth it for them.
Yes. Yeah. It was worth it. Yeah. Because here the cost was very high. You know, the local manufacturing, because of the labor involved,
yeah,
it was too high. So that is the very reason they import. And you used to sell like, you know, 20 containers a year or 30 containers a year or 40 containers a year. I mean, huge every month, like, you know, 4 or 5 containers every month. All the product, like more than 50% of our production was for export.
Wow.
So only, we were not selling, you know, I mean, 50% in domestic market in India, but other 50% was going exports to Africa, to Middle East, US, all different countries.
That's amazing. So, okay. So you said you switched to, when did you switch to sales and marketing? So you were in the engineering plant.
Yes.
And then how did, so I guess you got the plant going, right?
Yes. So as we like, you know, as I got more experience in the manufacturing, production, shop floor, management of labor, you know, all this, the employees, then, you know, my father said, now go to sales and start, you know, going into the meeting the customers, because now you know the product so much well, now you can sell it because you know the product. If customer asks you, oh, how do you make this? You know, how is this assembling done? How, you know, this forging is done, or how this is bent, or anything like hardness, testing, quality control, quality assurance, everything. So I knew everything, you know, by that time. So I'm the perfect salesman.
So were you okay with that? Were you okay with switching?
Well, yeah, because I like to travel. See, I traveled all over the world. So I started in going to Europe, because Europe had a higher, you know, they are like latest technology there, especially in Germany.
Yeah.
And so I liked to travel to all different parts of the world. So I said, okay, I'll go to US.
Wow. And were you married then?
So I started in going to Europe, because Europe had a higher, you know, they are like latest technology there, especially in Germany.
Yeah.
And so I liked to travel to all different parts of the world. So I said, okay, I'll go to US.
Wow. And were you married then?
So I started in going good. I like, you know, this is the way, you know, I just like to talk to people and get connected and, you know, like, you know, dancing in conversation.
So did you like that better than engineering?
Yes, yes.
Wow, that's interesting, right?
Yes. So yeah, I went, and, you know, because I was always, you know, curious about what other countries are doing, right? You know, how they are manufacturing, what is the technology they are applying? How can I learn and apply the same kind of, you know, same or better techniques so that, you know, I can do it more efficiently? Because I'm an engineer, right? So basically, I always see as an efficiency, automation, you know, some new techniques. So I learned, you know, so I went to all these manufacturers in Germany, and then, you know,
they would let you go to their plants and
yeah. There were machinery manufacturer, right? So all the machinery manufacturers, they want to sell their machines.
Oh, okay.
So they say,
you
okay.
You were looking at your competitors. You were looking at the machine people. Okay, okay.
Yeah, I was going and looking at the machines and all the machineries and all that. So they show me, okay, here are the machines. And then they also some, you know, take me. I said, okay, I want to see the actual production of your machine. So they take me to the plant where they are actually manufacturing.
Yeah.
So I used to go there. And not every time, but yeah, sometimes, you know, they have a good friendship with the customers.
Yeah.
So they will allow, you know, people.
And you were their customer.
Yes.
But you were also selling your own stuff, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so, but see, some of the people, they don't mind, you know, showing them, okay, you know, you can see them, at least, you know, those machines. You don't tour the entire plant.
Yeah.
But you can see that particular, you know, section of the building.
Right, okay. So did you buy, you were also buying machines for your plant?
Yes, yeah, so as we well bought some.
Yeah, but you were also there to sell your product.
Yes.
So both, you got to do both. That's
both.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah. So I do both.
Most salespeople are probably not engineers, right? So they probably wouldn't have both interests, right?
No.
Yeah. So that's cool. Okay. All right. Good. All right. So then you got into sales, and then at some point you got married, right?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So I got married to Zarna in India. And
what year was that? What year?
It was 1985.
Okay. 1985. All right. And so you were still living in India, and you were now were you in sales yet, or you were still in engineering then?
No, sales.
Sales, okay.
Yeah.
All right. And you, but you were still living there. And then at some point, right, you decided to move to the U.S.
Yeah. So then I used to come to U.S., you know, almost like, you know, two times a year, then three times a year, then six times a year, you know. So every other month I come here, I spend like 2 weeks and go back.
Yeah.
2 weeks and go back.
And what were you doing when you came? Visiting your customers?
Visiting the customers, you know, meeting them, you know, discussing with them, you know, projects, new product lines. I developed almost like 250, 300 different product lines.
Whoa.
Yeah. I mean, just LeapSpring was one part. But then I developed all the other like 250 parts all around that suspension parts. So LeapSpring was our manufacturing.
Yeah.
But then I started producing through vendors. So we had like all the different vendors who were manufacturing, but it was as per our design. So I started making the drawings and then make the, you know, the samples, prototypes, testing, and then we supply to US, to all the US customers. So 250 different product lines were developed.
But so you didn't make them, but did they work with your product so that then it was like a set?
Yeah.
Like less for them to buy?
Yes. Yeah. So it was like a sub-assembly, or, you know, it was mating our springs. So the whole suspension, you know, all the different, you know, bushing and spring pins and, you know, all the nuts and U-bolts and all different kind of parts, you know, all this. Yeah. So, but that's a big, yeah. So.
Wow.
Yeah. But then, you see, really, you know, But then we, of course, you know, that company then changed in 1994. One of our customers who were buying the springs, they said, can you make the rubber gaskets, you know, the seals, the pipe seals?
Yeah.
And we didn't know anything about rubber at that time. So we didn't know anything about the rubber. But my father said, okay, because, you know, he was a good friend of our agent in New York. So he said, can you find somebody in India who can supply me this? Because I need it badly, a good quality, reliable supplier. And that's how my father found a company in India who can manufacture this. And we started in rubber manufacturing. So it's a completely different manufacturing plant. It was not LeapSpring. It was not steel. It was not forging, nothing. It was completely different raw material. And then he started with that.
And when was that? What year was that?
That he started in early 90s.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So, but you kept, you kept the old thing and then you just added a new.
Yes.
So do you still have all of it now? You still make all of it now?
No, we because of that union, you know, that trade union problem, we had to close down that plant of automobile LeapSprings. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, because we it was too much of a stress every day. We had to lock out our plant for months. They don't work. And so we had to pay them, but they don't work. So it doesn't make any sense. We were losing customers. We were losing all our production, you know, plant, everything. And if they don't work, and if we have to make payments to them, salary and everything, I mean, it doesn't. So ultimately, you know, this is the time my father decided, you know, let's close down. And we moved out. And then by the time, you know, we had this new company started, a new manufacturing plant in 91, and, you know, then 94, we started our own manufacturing plant for the rubber gasket.
Wow.
And that is still running. That is the one which I started when I was in India. So I started that, which is about 100 miles north of Mumbai.
So did you have to get all new customers? Like what happened? So,
yes.
Wow. So you had to start over.
Yes. Yeah, it was completely new. You know, that time this was, but, you know, we had this one customer already because he told us to manufacture. And that is why, so we had that customer already there.
Wow.
But then, yes, then we started, you know, manufacturing them and then, you know, expanded and then found another new customers. And then it just continued, you know. So.
That's incredible, right? All that, right? But at least I guess you knew what to do, even though it was a different product, right?
Yes. Yes.
You knew how to sell, you knew how to market, you figured out how to manufacture it, and then you started over. Wow.
Yes.
So that's now 94. That's 30 years ago.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
And then in...
When did you move here after that?
In 2003, I moved here because, you know, from 94, I used to come, you know, six times here.
Okay.
To, you know, sales and marketing and all. So, you know, my family decided that, you know, it's too many, like I was missing, you know, my family, you know, my wife and, you know, Audi and everybody. So they said, okay, if we have to grow this business in US, then it is better that I move my family. And so I came to Atlanta, Georgia, and, you know, in 2003. And then, you know, like we have a distribution center. So we started with a distribution center where we manufacture parts from India, bring it in Atlanta, Georgia, into our warehouse, and then distribute all over the country.
Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing. So you just started that up from nothing, right? You just created it. That's incredible.
Yeah. That's how, you know, yeah, we started from, well, we just had, you know, that kind of, we got that good partner here again, you know, like who were representing us in Atlanta. So they really helped us. Yeah, they helped us in establishing here company and warehouse and, you know, sales and everything, accounting.
Amazing. All right. Yeah. So now that we've moved you to the US, we're going to take our commercial break and then we're going to hear about the next phase of your life and what you're up to now. You're not going to believe he went from, well, you already went from engineering to sales. So it's not as big of a jump, but stay tuned for what he's doing now. And we're going to do a little demo and we'll be right back after our commercial, after a word from our sponsor. Okay.
Okay.
Be right back.
Has social emotional learning become just one more thing on your teachers' plates? Do teachers and students both find it boring and ineffective? Then bring Kikori to your school. Kikori transforms classrooms through experiential SEL activities that help students play, reflect, connect, and grow. Even better, students say it's more fun than recess. Schedule a no-obligation conversation at kikoriapp.com/bringkikori. KIKORI.
Do you ever feel like you can't say what you really want to say? Or that you're stuck or in a holding pattern in your relationships, career, personal life, or finances? Are there things you want in life that you've given up on? Are you resigned that this is as good as it's going to get? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then Hillary Burns, host of the Getting Real with Hillary Show, has the solution you need. Hillary is a published author of 3 books and has a program called the Getting Real Process. This process frees you from what is holding you back, allowing you to create a life you love. Don't believe it? It is hard to believe that it could work, isn't it? The proof is that hundreds of Hillary's clients have used the Getting Real Process and are now free to create whatever they want in relationships, career, finances, enjoying life, or just loving themselves more. So go to realtalkwithhillary.com and order Hillary's book, Real Talk, and set up a conversation.
thank you, as always, to our sponsor, KokoriApp.com. If you'd like to bring experiential social-emotional learning to your schools, businesses, or teams, please contact them. As you saw in the commercial, it's more fun than recess. And as always, as usual, if you're not speaking up, go to realtalkwithhillary.com, get this book, and let's talk. Because I know I was someone, still am, a little bit of a people-pleasing, pleasant phony who wouldn't speak up. And this book, the writing of it changed my life. And now I'm still working on it, work in progress of speaking up. And it really, you can have what you want and not alienate people. So, and you can do it wrong. I've done it wrong. But anyway, we'll help you practice. So let's get back to our very special guest, Yogesh Dhruv, and we're going to hear about what he's doing now. So welcome. I know we could talk about your company forever. It's so interesting, but I want to hear about how you, and I know we talked before, but how you started this new venture, new calling, if you will, and then we're gonna experience it. So go mm-hmm. ahead. You went from engineering, Mr. You know, yeah. Science.
Right? Yes. So, 3.5 or 4 years ago, you know, we went to Yellowstone. Like, you know, my family, you know, went to Yellowstone for like 1 week or eight or nine days of, you know, trip to Yellowstone National Park. And that Yellowstone National Park, so, you know, we rented a RV that time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we were in that, you know, kind of a camping ground with that RV. And, you know, we were just taking all the trails and hikes and all that, you know, during the daytime. And evening when we come back and be in that RV and have our dinner, you know, we, like, you know, there is a small kitchen, right, mm-hmm. in the RV. So that recreational vehicle. So, you know, my daughter and myself, you know, we were like, you know, I used to do all the, my meditation and my yoga in the morning, and then, you know, take a hike and then do all my, you know, other, you know, energy practices and, you know, breathing exercise and everything. And, you know, like we were talking about it, and like my friends and other family members, they say, why don't you, you know, teach this? You know, why? I mean, you are so healthy, energetic, you know, looking young and, you know, keeping yourself fit and healthy with all these, you know, habits and all these practices. Then my daughter said, you know, why don't you start, you know, something like a coaching program where people can learn from you? Because, you know, I learned this actually, you know, in India from one of my guru.
And how old, when did you learn all that?
Oh, when I was around in early 90s, you know, when I really, you know, when I was traveling, all mm-hmm. this, you know, I had also a lot of stress that time mm-hmm. because of the traveling and, you know, customers, finding new customers, you know, talking to them, you know, and we produce, you know, 200 plus different product lines. You know, so all the vendors, they were all like different parts of India. I had to travel within India. I had to travel, you know, in exports to US and Europe and Middle East and Africa. So it was too much traveling. So I was under stress. And that time we found this guru who came to Rotary Club of India. So I was a member in Rotary Club.
Oh.
I was a member there. And then this our Guruji came to our one of the meetings. So every Monday we had a meeting at 6 o'clock in the evening. So I used to go there, and he was the guest speaker on one of the meetings, and I was impressed. And then he had the program. That program is every day at 6 in the morning till 9 for 21 days. So 21 days I went there. And if you go even like 1 minute late, so if you are at 6:01, the door is shut. No more entry. No more entry. You have to be there on time, no matter what. You know, whether there is traffic on the road, you know, you have all that kind of stuff. No. He was very strict and, you know, very, very punctual and absolutely, you know, how to run. You know, responsibility was the one class. You know, I learned all that, you know, how to be responsible, not for yourself, but responsible for the whole world. You are responsible for the whole world. You cannot say, I'm not responsible. And I mean, I can go on for on this. I mean, it was such a, I learned that, and it was so much, you know, a big impact in my life. It was like life-changing, life-altering.
So how old were you then? That was in the 90s.
It was 90. So, yeah, I was in 30s, right?
Wow.
Like, yeah.
So you went for 21 days. Were you ever late and didn't get in?
No.
No, you got in. Okay. So that changed your life. And then that's when you started doing all these practices, right?
Yeah. And then I did advanced programs. So he had advanced meditation retreats, you know, like different kind of techniques, different. So there were like so many of them. So like 3-day retreat, silent retreats for 3 days, 5 days, 7 days, 10 days, you know, all different retreats. So I used to go there for like in 90s all the way till 2003 before I came to US.
Right. Wow.
Every 3 months we used to go into that program whenever I'm not traveling, whenever I'm not, you know, going anywhere outside the country, I would go and attend those. So me and my wife, we both were so much in.
Oh, like, she went too?
Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. She
was, did it help with the stress?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, she was actually, you know, she was instrumental for me to, you know, go together. Like, you know, wow. she was like, yeah, she was pulling me.
So does she still do it too?
Yes.
In the morning? Wow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So both of us, yeah. So we both started practicing this and, you know, doing that every day. It is our ritual. Like you go to the, you get up in the morning and do your brush, right?
Yeah.
You brush your teeth or have a shower. Same thing, you know, without this practice of meditation, yoga, you know, breathing exercise, that is our brushing my teeth.
And how long does it take you each day?
Well, of course, you know, like 20 minutes to all the way to like, I mean, almost 1 hour. You know, I would say I keep about 1.5 hour in the morning for myself.
Wow.
That is my me time. So I keep that 1 to 1.5 hour, you know, depending on my all the meetings and other things. But that's really very, very important.
Because your wife does it too?
Yes.
With you or she does it on her own?
No, separate. Yeah, yeah. I do it because, you know, yeah, we have to do it on our own, right?
Yeah. So, wow. Yeah,
we do it together. I mean, not sometimes together, but yeah, most of the time separate.
So that's 30 years you've been doing this.
30 years, yes.
Wow. Okay. So when your daughter said, why don't you teach this? You said,
Yeah, so I was not sure, you know, whether anybody would really ready to, you know, learn this kind of thing. I said, man, this is something new. I don't know how to, you know, teach them. Or I mean, I know how to do it myself, but, you know, slowly, like, so I started with my family a little bit with friends a little bit, and then said, okay, yeah, I can really work on this. And then, you know, Audi inspired me more, said, yeah, I mean, why not? You know, so then I started, you know, making this website and, you know, getting some clients and, you know, work with them one-on-one, made the whole program. So there are modules of the program. So, you know, one can learn by one module by week. So it is a 3 months program as a foundation program. And then you have an advanced program, which is 6 months to a year. So whatever is your commitment. So I have clients, you know, who do it for 3 months as a foundation program, mm-hmm. then go to the next level and do 6 months or a 1 year program.
Wow.
Yeah.
And do you love it? Do you love teaching them?
Yes. Yeah. I love them, you know, because, you know, the way when they come, they have, you know, they have certain challenges or they have certain, you know, issues and, you know, in their, either in their health, in their relationship, in their finances, mm-hmm. or, you know, like in their network. So, you know, they have all these, you know, challenges. And when they come and they find a solution and they are so happy, they are so joyful.
Mm.
They are with that inner peace, you know, they get a freedom and, you know, that kind of the shift in their mindset, abundance, you know, because there is, everything is in abundance, you know, but we are having that scarcity mindset. And that scarcity is like, you know, you have a lack of all the areas in your life.
Yeah.
And that doesn't work. So, you know, they come and then they see the change and the shift and transformation in their life. And when I see that twinkle in their eyes and the smile on their face, that is my greatest reward.
Oh, wow. I love it. All right. So are you ready? He's going to do a little exercise. Are you ready for that?
Yes.
Let's try that. So I want you all, if you're listening or watching, if you're driving, but if you're sitting, do this with us. And I don't know what he's going to do, but I'm willing to try and see if I can get that twinkle and peace and abundance, right? That sounds good. I don't know if we can do it in 3 minutes, but we're going to go for it, right? Are you ready? So have to do?
Okay, so I'm going to start this music, little background music.
Okay.
And then I will speak and you can close your eyes.
Okay.
And then just listen to my instruction and just follow that. But you can, you can close the eyes and see what happens, okay?
Okay.
So, close your eyes. And just observe your thoughts. Just relax. Take a nice, soothing, relaxing breath in. Inhale. Very relaxing. Breathe in. And slowly exhale. Breathe out. Do it 2 more times. Nice, relaxing, soothing, breathe in and breathe out. Look at that air. Just look at that air which is flowing through your nostril. Just focus at the tip of the nose where the air is entering into your nose and see how it is entering from nose to your brain, to your neck, into your shoulders, into your lungs, into your abdomen area, lower abdomen area, and lower parts of the body, all the way to the feet. Then when you breathe out, observe that breath again, how that flows out from all the parts of the body. It goes out from the same nose. See how that breathe in, how that breath brings you so much of energy. It goes into all your organs, all your tissues, all the cells. Just be as an observer of the breath. Just relax the whole body. Just get that relaxed. All the muscles in the body is relaxed from top of the head all the way down to your toes. Just loosen it up. Completely loosen it up, every part of your body, and take that nice, soothing, relaxing breath, and slowly exhale that out. Do it one more time. Just be an observer. And see how beautiful that taking breath in is giving energy on every part of your body. One more last time. Nice. Soothing and relaxing. And then just whenever you are ready, you can open your eyes.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was cool. I was worried about the music because I couldn't hear the music, but I was like, let it go. You'll fix it later. You know, like I had to keep returning to the breath from the worry, but I did. I was pretty good. I could let it go. I'm like, we'll deal with that later. Just breathe. Yeah, that was very relaxing. Woo. Well, I hope if you're listening or watching, you did that too. And if not, rewind and try that because that was like, I just feel like, relax now, you know.
you get relaxed completely.
Yeah.
And when see the beauty is that, you know, when you are, this is known science of non-doing.
Mm.
And then science of non-doing is what, you know, I coach and teach.
Yeah.
And that is not doing, you know, attending meetings and Zoom calls and, you know, text messages and emails, yeah, and all that, phone calls. Yeah,
I would say non-worrying. I'm a worrier and I had to just keep putting the worry aside, you know?
Yeah, you have to be in your own true self.
Wow.
When you are being that true self, you know, there is an abundance of everything there. And you don't need, you know, it is so true that you don't need that, you know, the reason for happiness from outside world.
Wow.
You can get it from inside world.
Wow. Yeah. Well, thank you. That was so cool. Now, we just have like a minute left. What would you, I know we're going to have in the notes how people find you. I think it's yogeshdhruv.com. It'll be under your name, you know, in the interview. So you can find him there. What would you like to leave people with? Like, what would you see as possible if your work could take off in 5 years? How would the world look?
So I, you know, my vision is that, you know, I create an abundance mindset in the business world by bringing mindfulness to business owners.
Wow.
Because I am a businessman, so I would like to empower business owners from their daily stress, struggles, challenges, all the worries. This is, you know, I get this, you know, such a tremendous joy, that inner peace, that inner peace, and, you know, that love. Man, so I would like to empower business owners from their daily stress, struggles, challenges, all the worries. This is, you know, I get this, you know, such a tremendous joy. That inner peace, and, you know, that love. Man, so I would like to empower business owners. I've been practicing it for so many years, in spite of all the challenges in my business, in my career, everywhere. So I can really, you know, bring that to the business owners and the business world. It will be, you know, my dream, and also to serve them.
Yes. Awesome. Oh, that's beautiful. Well, thank you. Really, thank you for that gift that you're bringing to the world. It's beautiful. And we certainly got a taste of it. And what a different, you know, just, you know, when you were telling the first part of your story, you know, it was all about engineering, but here you had this going on at the same time. We didn't know. And so thank you for joining the two. It's really magical. So thank you.
Yes. Yeah. No, thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Yeah. Awesome. We'll see you next week. Thanks.
Okay. Bye.
Thank you for watching this episode. I started getting real with Hillary when I discovered that I was a people-pleasing, pleasant phony and wanted to be more of my real self. We can grow together. If you will like the show, subscribe to my channel, and share this episode with your friends and family so that we can have a world that's more real.